At times, the scale of these revolts was really immense. There's no other word that we can use for it. Just to give you an example, at its height, the 1639 revolt of the Nu-Pieds in Normandy, that is to say, and it's a revealing title for these rebels, the men with naked feet, the men without shoes. The revolt of the Nu-Pieds in Normandy had fully 20,000 peasants under arms. Not only did they have 20,000 peasants under arms, but these peasants were organized into companies that actually reported to regular drills and musters. The revolt of the Croquants in southwestern France between 1637 and 1641 was the largest peasant revolt in French history before the French Revolution. It involved something like 30,000 men under arms at its height, and I think can fairly be called the largest mass movement in early modern France before the Revolution. Indeed, in the southwest of France, where peasant revolt has been better studied than in any other part of the country, there were at least 450 peasant revolts in the period between 1590 and 1715. Moreover, at least 60% of these uprisings were concentrated in the 25-year period 1635 to 1660. That is to say, the high tide of peasant revolt coincides with this so-called 20 years crisis and with the surge in royal taxation from the 1630s. Having set out the chronology in that way, it will probably come as no surprise to hear that most of these peasant revolts were in fact directed against royal taxation. It would probably also come as no surprise to hear that most of these revolts were ultimately repressed by the armed might of the crown. Nevertheless, if peasant revolts had several predictable features, they also had some fairly surprising ones. It's worth pointing out, as long as we're talking about taxes, that royal taxes would continue to increase over the later 17th and into the early 18th century. Indeed, between 1685 and 1715, royal taxes actually tripled. Moreover, at the same time, there were several very serious harvest failures and famines in France. Indeed, the harvest failures and famines of 1693-94, 1698-99, 1709-10, and 1712-13 were probably the most excruciating in the entire early modern period. Nevertheless, for all this concentrated suffering, taxes, famines, mass mortalities, there were very few peasant revolts in the last third of the 17th century. And I think that's worth stressing because it indicates to us that it cannot be the case that it was misery alone which was enough to drive the people to revolt. Therefore, we have to look at the peasant revolt rather more carefully. It's a phenomenon much more complicated than some kind of Skinnerian experiment with rats in the cage, or you zap them with electricity and they squeal. It's got to be more complicated than that. Peasant revolts in 17th century France have got a number of fairly common characteristics. Unsurprisingly, they tended to break out in the spring, when the weather got a little better, and they also tended to cease or slow down in July or August, when the peasant army had to disband, so that the men could return to the fields and bring in the harvest. Peasant revolts thus tended to lose impetus pretty quickly, usually within the space of about 5 months. The typical sparks to a revolt were about threefold. First of all, the arrival of tax collectors, especially tax collectors for a new and therefore despised tax. Second of all, the arrival of troops to be billeted in the village. Early modern soldiers were extremely badly behaved, even worse than students in college dormitories. And third of all, the third typical spark for a revolt in early modern France in the mid-17th century was the arrival of the bailiff to confiscate a peasant's property for non-payment of taxes. Now, the revolts themselves were fairly clearly grounded in the structure of the local community. If the tax collector came, or the bailiff came, or the soldiers came, somebody would ring the church bell, which was a universal peasant warning signal in early modern Europe, and all of the able-bodied men in the village would rush into the village square, armed with sticks, with pitchforks, with pikes, with the occasional arquebus, grandfather's old sword, so on and so forth. And the violence which would then follow, the violence typical to a revolt, especially revolts against a taxman, had an almost ritualistic character to it. It had a very clear series of steps, these peasant revolts. They almost always followed a series of stages. The first stage in a peasant revolt, typically speaking, was to besiege the inn. If the excisemen or the taxmen were coming from outdoors, they had to stay somewhere overnight. Most villages had their own inn. There was an obvious place for them to stay, and therefore an obvious place to find them. An angry crowd would gather around the inn where the terrified tax collectors were huddling. The crowd would typically smash the windows. It would hack down the door. It might tear off the roof. But the building itself would almost be razed to the ground. The crowd would basically break in and absolutely ruin the establishment and ideally destroy all of the taxman's papers to prevent the levying of taxes. The second step, equally ritualized in the peasantry's resistance to taxation, was to go after the excise men themselves, these hated tax collectors. They would be humiliated, and they would be beaten up. They might be pelted with manure or other kinds of foul objects easily found in a peasant village. They might be thrown in the river, showered with insults, have their clothing torn off. There were all kinds of nasty things that could happen to a taxman. But what is interesting is that the taxman himself would actually rarely be killed. They wouldn't take his life. They would vent their rage on his body without taking his life.